Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Ron Greer, Dr. Paul Hall, Stephanie Thayer, and Dr. Craig Thayer in Raising Expectations.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this week's version of Raising Expectations. We're sure glad you're with us tonight. We've got a great show. It's going to be something that's going to give you great insight, and we're going to have a good time, and you're going to learn some things that I know you're going to want to share with the people that you love in your family. As you know, Raising Expectations, that's the name that we use, and that's the reason we're here. We believe, people of faith, we believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. We believe he's the Son of God. We believe Jesus died on the cross to pay for your sins. Yep. And that way we know who we are. We know where we're going. But perhaps the greatest part of walking in the Christian life is to know that he's there with us every day. He said he'll never leave us or forsake us. And in the world we live in today, that's a good thing to know. Amen. He's always there. So tonight we've got someone who is going to be sharing some great insight for you today in that area. And as I'm looking at this, you know, we're going to introduce him in just a moment, but we're going to begin by introducing our team very quickly to you all. Again, I'm Pastor Joe. Most of you know me. I'm a retired pastor. I used to be an entertainer. I used to do this, that, and the other. And so at this point in life, God's given me the ability to be a part of a great team of guys and gals and to present Raising Expectation for what he laid in my heart a few years back. So also in this great team that we have, Dr. Thayer and his wife, Stephanie, they won't be with us tonight. They're not going to be able to pick up where we are because of where they are. So we're going to be giving them back with us next week. And they said to say they're praying for us and they'll be watching us a little bit later. So they'll be back with us next week. And so you be make sure you let them know you missed them. Go on the website and say, hey, we missed you. So also in Central California, we'll work our way this way. Actually, Central America, the great state of Texas, We have back with us. We know you think he disappeared, but we found out nobody kidnapped him. We found him, and he's back with us. And that's Ron Greer, Pastor Ron Greer, who is our favorite pastor in the state of Texas. And he's just had some really busy work he was doing. We've been praying for him, switching up Wisconsin and doing some other things. So Ron has been blessing lives for a long time, just the way he blesses our lives. So we're glad you're back, Ron. We missed you, man. And
glad to be back.
Amen. Good to have you with us. He works with Man in the Mirror also. He's a counselor for men. He's the guy's guy, and he'll teach you from the Word of God just what's going on in your life, guys. He's the kind of guy you want to sit down on the talk with over a cup of coffee and say, man, I feel a heck of a lot better. So spend some great time with him. Look him up on the website and read about Ron. And if we come all the way back to California, which is where I'm coming from, you'll also, if you go to the Southern California, you'll meet, again, our favorite guy, Dr. Paul Hall, who's a retired pastor. Paul is a theologian. He's still theologing. Somebody said, what happened to the word theologue? They probably thought they looked it up and couldn't find it. We made it up, but it's a great word. Paul theologues uses experience he's had for many, many years as a pastor to insert it into creative ways of understanding the world we live in today. So Paul is with us all the time from Southern California, and he's in Rocket Town right there by the Air Force Space Base. And we're just glad that you're with us tonight, Paul. Good to see you, man. All right.
Good to see you, too. Yep.
And he's got the Kurt's favorite wall of all. We should write that. Kurt's favorite wall of all. He's got the sword back there. Saber, excuse me. They didn't give him in the Navy, so I don't know what they called him. But anyway, there it is right there. So now let's go back to our guest tonight. You all, in fact, some of you have said, where is Frank Roberson? And one nice lady and her family called and said, is Mr. Roberson coming back? And I felt like Mr. Roberts there. I said, no, we'll find out, but we'll get a hold of him. And he graciously said, sure, I'll come back. He's part of the family. He's the kind of guy that, like we're talking about, we love to spend time with and be able to talk with. He's coming to us again from, I believe, McKinney, Texas, and not far from right, yeah, right next door there, not far away. So all the way from McKinney, we've got Frank Roberson. As you know, he speaks with us quite often on things like awake and safe. And the world we live in today can be a dangerous place. It's not like you just walk home or walk here or do this or that anymore. You got to pay attention. And he's taught us a lot. Many of you have gotten back to me and said, we really are much more aware of what's going on in our circumstances than we ever were before. So Frank has been an encouragement there. And he has a lot of experience. And this experience comes across with protocols and safety habits that, when they become habits, help us to take better care of our families as dads and moms and grandparents. When you get real old, listen up, sons and daughters, you can take care of all of us too. So that works out good. Take care of mom and dad at the same time. So all the way today from the great state of Texas, let's welcome with a round of applause, Frank Roberson, the world's greatest Dallas Cowboy fan you're ever going to meet. And he has had to come down a little bit to get into the show tonight. So let's give him the round of applause. Frank, welcome to Raising Expectations.
Hey, Frank.
Good to see you, brother.
Thank you. Can I get a replay on that intro, please?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Only if you throw it down with gusto. You got to throw it down with gusto.
Oh, yeah. Bill Belichick, right? Thanks for having me back, you guys. Appreciate it.
Yes. So how have you been? And how are things going in the world of taking care of people and seeing what's new today?
Well, a lot's happened since the last time we talked, but everything's good. Cowboys are 2-0, so it's been two good weeks. For the Cardinals, probably going to be a good month. It's been one of those, since I was a kid in high school, that the Cowboys lost on Sunday. It was a tough week. I was grumpy. And you know, people, that 1-15 season really hurt at high school. was, I think I got in trouble more than any other time. But anyway, a lot's happened since we talked last. Black Rhino, my company's actually taken over the contract for the family I've been working for the last year. I hit my 1-year anniversary with the family. We've been able to accomplish some of the goals we had 5 years when we got married and Christy and I got married. We now have a new house to have my big client be the one client that I just get to work with all the time. That's amazing. I get to bring on some new agents to add on to some new features of making sure that they're safe because, you know, the world is changing every day. Drivers aren't getting any better in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and it is getting to be a mess around here a little bit. And then there's travel. I got to go on a trip with the client's son out to San Francisco, which was fun. Just the two of us, and that was the first trip in a while. Client or a member of the family that I was protecting, so that was fun. There's been a lot of changes, a lot of very positive changes. We've been wanting to get into a house, and now that we are, we actually turned in the keys to the house we were renting until we found a home, and we turned those in tonight, which was pretty awesome. Wow. We've been in the house for 30 days now.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So yeah, it's been an interesting time since the last time we met.
What do you think about the stories you've been reading about the, what do you call it, where you call and somebody picks you up, the Uber, the new versions of Uber that are coming up with guys who used to be special forces, Ron, would you call it that, where they actually did?
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. They got shut down as fast as they got opened because apparently they forgot they had to license the people to be able to carry the firearms and actually work that.
One small body. Oversight.
Tiny.
It's detailed. Oh, no. Detailed, yeah. I guess the company got shut down pretty quick. But I mean, that's what they have security driving companies. When I take family to the UK, there's a company out there that I call because every driver there is a trained security driver. I don't like driving on the wrong side of the road. Yeah. My wife would say I can't find things on the right side of the road. So, that, you know, there are companies that do that around the world. It's just you have to be able to do that. In my industry, when I was just doing contract and not working full time for a family, I would go out on a contract and I would be assigned a driver. Mm. And some of them are former police officers, some of them are whatever. But it's a huge difference between being a law enforcement officer doing your thing and then driving for an EP detail, executive protection detail. It's a totally different thing. I earned my spot with the first family I started protecting in 2010. We tried out a driver, or the team tried out a driver and an advanced guy, and I was the advanced guy. And the driver got stuck at two traffic lights when we called him back to the front of the courthouse where the wife had been doing jury duty. And she was left out on the curb for 2.5 minutes, which is a no-no. 80%, I think the statistic keeps going up, but I think it's 80% of anything that happens in a protection detail happens on pickup and drop-off. So for three of us in suits with the earpieces and sunglasses standing around on a curb, not only did we stand out in the middle of Eureka, California, up in the rural area there, it just was very dangerous. I had advanced it the day before. This family had a legitimate threat against their lives, and we're standing on the curb for 2.5 minutes waiting for the guy that just didn't start the car fast enough when he got the radio to come in. So we had a Hayward police department, a police officer that was retired, one driver I got that he thought that after day one, he could change the way the orders told him what he was supposed to wear. Sure. And thought he could wear what I was wearing, which is a polo shirt and jeans, because the client from Russia was wearing a polo shirt and jeans. And we were going into buildings, into meetings and doing these things. And the guy that was signed up to be the driver showed up with a white Toyota. It was supposed to be a dark American-made SUV. In a black suit, black tie. Second day, showed up in a Hawaiian shirt and khaki pants. And the client was upset. So we had to actually pull the driver off of that detail and have him replaced. So I've experienced drivers that have no experience that are really, really good, and some that are supposed to have all kinds of experience that have been a disaster. But you have to, if you're going to put yourself out there and try to drive people like Uber, you better have people qualified, trained, licensed, everything. You better button it up before you put somebody out in that situation, because that could get dangerous real fast.
Mm. One of my best friends, Harry, such a best friend. I forgot his last name. It was just Harry. He was in the church with me. He was the district attorney of Hayward. He was probably in that courthouse all those times. And Paul pastored in Hayward. He had a church. And yeah. But Paul used to have you guys out front to take him home.
Yeah. It's the same for pastors when they carry. They have to be licensed and trained. Yeah, same thing.
Yeah. Wasn't as bad back then, huh, Paul?
Yeah, not as bad.
You know, Frank, I'm pretty sure that your industry would rise and fall on being precise, not making mistakes. Word of mouth, I would think, you know, that there'd be a lot of that going on. Can I just ask you, this is such a general question and maybe so hard to answer. But you said earlier that the world is changing so quickly, and certainly it is. But how would you say, if I were just come up to you and say, Frank, how does the world really work? How would you characterize it really working? I mean, I'm sure that we see our stuff on TV, and depending on which channel you watch, you know, you get different versions and things like that. But in your experience, how does this thing really work? You know, in our culture, and that's changing rapidly too. But is that a fair question? You know, how does it really work?
The protection side of it, or just life itself and getting through it every day?
Just the protection side. Okay. You know, as much as you can share.
Well, I get asked the question all the time: why do the people that hire you need security? Mm-hmm. The Wine family I protected, she's worth $8 billion. She didn't have any direct threats. She had more direct threats when her husband was alive. You know, the family I work with now is very low profile, very low key. But it's not specifically the three things we do is protect them from embarrassment. I learned that when I first started working for politicians. We protect them from humiliation, embarrassment, that kind of thing. And then we also protect them from things that happen around them. So one of the pictures on my wall, the one right there, that's Queen Elizabeth walking by. And I actually was, my boss was sitting in the suite with her at the Royal Ascot. And when she came back, she was coming back, and you're not supposed to take a picture, but I was standing there. There's two plainclothes guys here and everything. And I did one of these, and that picture, she actually looks over right at me and catches me taking a picture of her.
Like, why are you taking that picture?
So I mentioned that because we were sitting in her suite at the Royal Ascot. So even though my boss didn't have any threats, she has threats. You know, she's had the guy with the crossbow. She's has guys, all people all over the place that like to hurt her, whatever. And when we're in London for the trip right before that, the Ariana Grande concert in 2017, remember they had that thing there?
They lit
off a thing inside the stadium, so everybody start rushing to the exits, and then they blew up an exit. That's where they did their damage.
Yeah.
When I walked the streets of London to advance for our trips to London, I had to find shops that had basements because we're in the middle of that. We're in the middle of people driving down the street and throwing acid on people walking down the street. We had vans that were driving up the sidewalks in the UK, just running people down. So it's not always that there's a threat against the person that you're protecting. It's they have the ability to have somebody there in case something happens. So when I walk into a place, I know all the exits. I've looked at it before. I've seen it, like the State Fair. We're going to State Fair in a week or two. I've already been to the fair, but I go back to the fair again. I'm going to have a new agent with me on that trip. So we're going to go advance it. We're going to see where we go in, where we go out, last year we had an medical emergency. The first time I've ever had to use an evac route to go to a hospital from a venue after 22 years. And even though after 22 years, I've never had to use any of those routes, it's still the discipline of doing it because it's going to come up. People ask why, you carry your gun every day. Yeah. Are you ever going to use, I'm never going to fire my gun. I'm sure my career is never going to be where I'm going to use my firearm, but you have it there just in case, because the world is different. That's why they hire people like me to do security for them. If I'm at an event where President Bush is, he does a lot of things here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and we go to one of those events, he has threats against him. You know, they had some guys that were just convicted of trying to a plot against him here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, a couple of years ago, Pastor?
Yeah.
And they arrested they've been watching him and doing all their intelligence, and some of them do more and have better technology than I do when I'm going out to advance or see what's going on in the areas. So if something happens at an event where he's at, those people that I'm protecting are not going to be left there to run with everybody else. Mm-hmm. We're going to, the concert where I first worked for them, we had an escape route backstage when I was on the floor with the daughter. Something had happened at that venue, because the day before I went and saw everybody, I met with everybody, met with security, they walked me through the whole venue. I knew what gate to get to on the floor of the stadium, the concert, to get out if something had happened at a concert. So hopefully that kind of answers the question, but you probably have a couple thoughts on that, but it's not specifically a threat against the person I'm protecting. It's protecting them from things around.
So Frank, based on what something you just talked about, right? So kind of explain to people how far in advance do you do your surveillance and your investigation and examining the scene? And then if you're doing those, how do you do your risk assessment? How do you assess the vulnerabilities? How do you sort of say for you memorize an emergency exit? Is that the only one you do, or do you have others that you put in place just in case something happens wrong there?
Yeah,
I'm doing exit plans. I mean, how do you go about doing those things?
Okay, I was looking for a notebook. I have some notebooks here from past things and folders from past things. So it depends on the venue. So if we're going to a dinner, like last Sunday, we had a dinner with a visiting pastor that this family supports from Florida came in. And because we're just going to a restaurant and we're doing that, I want to make sure that the people who are working are going to be working that night, all night. So I go there about an hour, hour and a half before I pick up the family. I go talk to the ballet captain. I go talk to the maitre d'. I go talk to the restaurant manager. I'll pick out a table. Maybe, hey, we had a private room at that point, but I meet the waiter that we're going to have and ask his name. Because when I go in and bring the wine family, the lady that owned the wine family I protected for 3 years, she really loved the part about when I would introduce her to the sommelier and the waiter and how long they've been there. She's in the wine business, so she loves to know whether if the sommelier has a lot of experience, right? So the restaurant, now if you go, say, the Kentucky Derby or the Royal Ascot, Kentucky Derby, I did advance every single day. The reason why is because I want to know if that security person is going to be at that location that I need to go through every single day. Yeah. And I build relationships with all the people that I need to know to get through the area, the back kitchen. The chef, we're going to be going through the back kitchen, you know, three times that day. So I meet with them in the morning. I get there probably 7-8 o'clock in the morning. Boss doesn't get there till about 12:30. I'm seeing everybody at the Churchill Downs, from the paddock to the restaurant, to the suite that we're in, to the guy that runs all the food in the suite, and all the security. And we have a little lapel pin we're given. So law enforcement knows we're armed, and we were able to move, and we have badges to get in everywhere we need to get into, armbands, wristbands, everything. And we actually walk on the track when in 2018, I got to walk the track because she had a Good Magic was one of her horses and it was one of the favorites to win. So all that stuff, I walk that stuff early in the morning. So I'm seeing horses running around doing that, doing their practicing. Same thing with like a concert venue. I'll go the day before. I won't go too far in advance because people change. The staff will change. You know, if I meet Johnny on Tuesday, we're not there till Saturday, but now Johnny's off and sick and Charles is there. I haven't met Charles. Charles doesn't know me from anybody when I walk in. Right. Know nothing about why I'm there or what's going on. So I think a big event, I'll do a whole week's worth. Right. And I'll see it every single day. Restaurant, I'll go there a couple hours before, that kind of thing. The state fair, I'll start talking to the PR department and the security department about a week before. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go advance it. And then I'll meet the security that's going to have the access point at the state fair where the VIP parking is, where the governor, senators, everybody, important people park, is blocked off. You can't turn into that area unless you have a credential. So I have to make sure I get that credential and I know that security guard's information. I dog with me sometimes. And last year when I advanced the fair, the lady got mad at me because I went around her barrier. And when she saw my dog, Maggie was poured on the charm. So, what are you here for? Oh, I'm looking for where the VIP lot is. Oh, let me show you. Right? If she was up there, I'd probably be in a little more trouble. But so sometimes I take the dog with me. But it just depends if that answers the question.
Yeah. So now things like a restaurant or I can see the fair being advanced, but you know, your client wants to go to a restaurant. She's not making reservations, right? Am I correct?
No, I'll give you an example because this was one of my favorite things and probably the one I'm most proud of because it's hard. Mm-hmm. Those people at that level, even like when I was at the Super Bowl with the guy that from Atlanta I was protecting, I took a week off this year to go to the Super Bowl, and last year I was working for him on a regular basis. And he wants to go. They don't want to go to a restaurant you can just get into. They want to go to a place to be seen. You know, we're at a restaurant down two tables down from Jerry Jones. We got NFL players everywhere. But what happens is, I get a phone call on one of the clients that had the one I worked for 9.5 years that had the direct threat. 5 o'clock in the evening in San Diego, La Jolla area, I get a call. They're scrapping the rest of the day. They want to go eat at P.F. Chang's in La Jolla. Okay. 5 o'clock, Saturday night. Okay, let's see what it can do. So I call the manager. I said, I'm bringing in a VIP. I'm coming there. I'll be there in 6 minutes. I need to meet with you and see if there's a table available for this VIP. Who's your VIP? Oh, I can't tell you who that is. I'm sorry. But I'll be rolling in here in a minute. I roll in and go in to see her. She sees the earpiece. She sees the stuff. She knows. I give her my card. And I said, the motorcade will be here in 12 minutes or whatever. So we have all of a sudden to clear out a big table in the corner. I get to meet the busboy. I get to meet the waiter, general manager. And when the Rolls Royce pulls up and the other SUV pulls in behind, I'm at the front door and we walk them straight through. I walk them through the bar area and they've already laid out a line where the manager wants me to walk directly through. Mm-hmm. And we go through a very, very busy restaurant, past all the people that are waiting, and go straight into this big table. And it looks pretty cool, I imagine. But it's very hard to pull off.
Right. Okay. All right. Yeah, because I guess in my brain, I'm thinking that, well, you got somebody who's a VIP. They really don't want people and staff knowing they are coming. That gives you an open for changing things, contacting people, setting things up. So, okay, that makes sense.
When you have 6 minutes before you get there, you have to use the VIP card.
Right.
And you still can't tell them, but when the Rolls Royce and the SUV, dark SUV, and now you got four armed guys bringing in a guy and his daughter into a PF Chang's, and that sets the stage. That was the one time also where I almost had to, the only time I've almost had to go hand to hand on somebody, because we walked back to the same area, and I do this with the hand. We've learned to do this with the hand when you're moving somebody, and he didn't like it and got in my face, so I would click on the radio, and like 3 seconds later, there's two guys on both sides of him, and he goes, "Oh, okay." And that was the part, but that's the only time I've ever had somebody stand right in my face.
I've had a number of experiences. Two in particular, which I still question the security people. One is they had the presidential forum at our church back in 2016, mm-hmm. with all the candidates, and I still have no idea how it happened, but I sort of waved and spoke to Dr. Carson as he was walking back. I had the urge that I wanted to use the bathroom, couldn't get off the front of the stage, so I sort of walked the same route Dr. Carson walked in, mm-hmm. and ended up in the green room, and finally confronted in the green room by one of the security guys, and it just went over my head going. And see, my wife after later, where she saw it on the video, she goes, "Why were you back there?" I said, "I was going to use the bathroom." "How did you get back there?" "I don't know. I just walked." The second one was the Cowboy Stadium. My nephew was playing. All of a sudden, he disappeared off the field, and I didn't see him when he left. And then the guy behind me says, "Well, he got hurt, and the medical team took him off." So I was going to go downstairs to check on him. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that you can't just go downstairs.
Yeah.
But somehow, just asking questions, acting normal, one person led me to another person, led me to another person downstairs. And then I ended up on the standing in front of the locker room. The security guy tells me he's in the shower. He goes inside, talks to him, and he comes back out. So he said, "Come on in." And the next thing I know, there's a giant tree with a very, very stern look on his face. Coming toward me, trying to figure out, why are you down here? So it was a bizarre thing. I'm going, okay, so where was the security lapse there? And it just never occurred to me until after the fact. And we met afterwards with my nephew and his teammates. They have a gathering for the families. And he goes, "So, wait, how did you get down there?" I said, "I don't know. I just walked." So he informed me that day that a number of people got fired that night. From the deal. So they couldn't figure out how the security details. I don't know why the holes were there.
Wow.
But anyway, all that to say that it still fascinates me when I run into folks who do security and the things they do. Now, so one other question. So yes. In environments, say, for instance, Kentucky Derby, a lot of people working there. And they're there, weeks in advance preparing for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
How then do you and your team ensure that the people there are the people supposed to be there, as opposed to folks planted there, anticipating your client being there? Background checks or anything like that at all?
Not on a thing that big, but we are in a suite. So
okay. All right.
People that are in a suite I mean, it's like $8,500 or something like that per person to get into that suite.
Okay. All
right. So, you know, I had a Diet Coke next to Miley Cyrus. You don't get anybody that just goes in there. Okay. Her security wasn't in it. But surprisingly, you'll find this surprising. There was only three other security guys that I saw at all the races I went to over 3 years. I saw the same guys working. I don't know their clients, but I just saw the same three guys only at all these things. We went to the law enforcement briefings before the Breeders' Cup. We go to the briefings before certain things when there's threats and threat assessment meetings for any security in law enforcement. And I only saw the same three guys other than me.
Hmm.
There aren't a lot of people that, if they are doing security, that are doing it the proper way, because you're supposed right. to check in with law enforcement. You're supposed to check in with the track. You're supposed to check in with, you know, security at the track and the people running the rooms that you're going to be in. So there are probably more people there. Yeah. But here, I'll give you two examples of kind of what you're talking about. If you act like you know what you're doing, you can get into a lot of places. And I've learned that from day one, and it is true. We had a guy at the Breeders' Cup where my boss was down there presenting an award to the winner of that particular race. Mm-hmm. And sheriff's deputies came in, three of them, two with long guns, and they all focused in on one guy standing next to us. So what I did was I whispered in her ear. I was behind her, whispering in her ear, if this guy does not comply, I'm going to spin you 180 degrees and I want you to walk 10 paces to the gate and wait for me.
Okay.
Just so she knew what was going to happen, but nobody else was, it wasn't. This guy was not supposed to be in there. He had no credentials to be in there. He had nothing. He had been robbing rich ladies of their watches and jewelry for the previous days at the race.
Wow.
And when we walked back up the paddock after that and going back to our suite, she was griping because she's on the board. She's griping. How in the world that guy could have had a bomb? He could have had a gun. He could have had any. How in the world did he talk his way into the winner's circle at the Breeders' Cup? Those kind of security, just acting like you know what you're doing. There's one in the news with Robert Kennedy, the guy that dressed as a U.S. Marshal, fully armed, had a badge, everything, got into his campaign event a few days ago, and his security at Gavin DeBecker, he has regular EP guys like me Gavin DeBecker, they were smart enough to understand that this guy, there's something crazy about this guy, but he had all the stuff. He looked like all the other U.S. Marshals were there. They were able to stop him before he was able to do what he was supposed to do. And he had fully loaded, extra ammo, he had everything, and a badge.
Wow.
So it can happen anywhere, to a presidential candidate, to, you know, just being at the Breeders' Cup doing your everyday normal stuff.
Wow. Right. Well, I've explained to me that's these things that happen like three or four times, and as usually someone says, well, you're a nice, gregarious guy who act like you know what you're doing, and you're supposed to be there. I'm going, okay, I got to study that so I can perfect that. figure out what that is.
Face, Ron. Ron, it's your honest face. Ron's got an honest face, don't you think? That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I got to figure it out so I can study and, you know, kind of work on it.
I think the Dallas Star has a lot to do with your credentials, Frank. You know,
yeah, I just wear it.
Can I ask you a question? How do your clients ever feel like they're just kind of hemmed in? Do they feel the freedom to go places and experience things, or how much lead time? You know, that's got to be. It's got to be a little nerve wracking, maybe, if that's a good word, to feel like you can't go where you'd like to go. So how does that work?
Well, I've been close with most of the family members that I've protected over the three different families. This family is more inclusive than any. I'm expected to eat with them when they eat at restaurants and things like that. Usually I would say to the wine lady, I'll be at the bar. I go up there, pre-order my food, prepay my food, get it in, you know, everything's ready. And I have the waiter telling me when she's getting dessert. So this family, they expect it. I mean, they're comfortable with it. They have people in the house all the time. Those people I do background checks on, the vendors, that type of thing. We've caught some bad vendors before. I think I told the story once before about a vendor they had. And, you know, the other family I was with for 9.5 years, he was a very private guy, but, you know, when we dropped him off, he was in his private world. We sat there and we talked to him. I built a relationship with him over that period of time where I started having meals with him and stuff like that. But it wasn't, he liked us to eat with him too, but we preferred to not do that, especially when we had meetings and stuff like that. But every family has it at a different level. I'm lucky to be as close as I am to the families that I've been working for. It takes a special person to be able to work a family, by the way. A personality that understands that the dynamic of working with a family. It's not the same as working for a CEO of a company. I've protected Marissa Mayer from Yahoo when she was there. A couple other CEOs out there. It's a totally different thing than working with a family. And not everybody has that personality to do. I'm not special or anything. It's just, I have a personality, probably came from a political experience that I had, that is able to mesh in and have the conversations and do the things I need to do, and stay close to them, because, you know, they call me at 4 o'clock in the morning when the boss had to be rushed to the hospital. And when I'm in the emergency room, I hear the daughter, "Where's Frank? We need Frank." And here I am running into the emergency room. I mean, close to this family, right?
Yes.
But then there's people, the wine lady, we talk on the phone. We talk in the car. She didn't like anybody else in the car. We just drive and she'd tell me about the kids, the dogs, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And really never talked business, but she knew I was always there. She knew I was always at the restaurant somewhere, but we didn't have that real closeness, but like I've had with the other two families. But we're still, I was put up in a house right by the ranch, so I had quick access to her. She called me directly when she wanted to go somewhere. And I think they accept that fact, but there are times, like my family that I work for now is, you know, mostly on the weekends, I'm on call. You know, they call me if something pops up, which they like to have, make sure that I have my time on the weekends, but they don't have to. I'm there every meal they eat every day, one big meal during the day, and I'm always sitting there with them, whether it's the whole family or just the boss or just the boss's wife and the kids or whatever. So just there's different levels of it.
That's a special call. That's a special call. Yeah, well.
Can I pick your brain about a couple things, Frank? Just one, how would you protect a school with your experience? Well, how do you think a school should be protected? Do you think they should have an officer on the grounds at all times, or, you know, given your knowledge and your experience?
This would be interesting.
Huh?
This would be an interesting answer. Go ahead, Frank.
Look, you're recording this, right?
Israeli style or what else?
Well, Senator, I think, as an advanced guy,
uh-huh.
And I don't know if they do this at school, so I'm going to say stuff that I don't know if they actually do. So if my job is to protect a school, I need to know every exit. I need to know everything about it. I'm not just a guy that my day today, darn it, I have to be at such and such high school today.
Right.
If I'm going to keep a school safe, I need to know that all the doors are locked. I need to know all the people that have access. Schools aren't, I mean, they're big, but they're not that big where you can't know if you're going to be there all the time and assigned to that school, where you don't know who's coming and going, who's supposed to be coming and going. there's a high school here in Arlington that has a PA system where you have to buzz a button and the office has to know you're coming, and you tell them your name and you come in, and I don't know that they have an officer. But they have that on the other side of the building as well. But I think knowing where the weaknesses are, so to speak, in the facility, that's a big deal, because if I'm securing a home, it's not much different than a school, except you got kids in there. And it's a different design, obviously, but if I'm doing an estate, I'm got cameras. The first thing I did first 90 days with this family, $60,000 new alarm system with 32 cameras. Same with the ranch property out in East Texas. They already had one out there, but I made sure it was working and everything is good. I walk around the properties. I make sure all the gates are secure and everything. I know where all the access points are. So you just have to, I think if you have an officer there, it's important that the officer isn't sitting in an office. I don't know that they do. I'm sure they walk around and do their thing as if I was assigned to be there once an hour, walk around or whatever. But have cameras, someone watching the cameras, whether it's that officer, and that officer once an hour goes and checks everything. It all starts with making sure you advance the building so you know where all the soft spots are. And then you figure out how you get a soft spot. And then you get the school district. You know, the school district has to be behind it too. They're forced to have an officer there. They may not be supportive of an officer who says, hey, we need a camera here, here, and here. Can we put one in next week? But that's important stuff. 32 cameras sounds like a lot. I mean, on my house, we have two in the front. We have one in the back. We're adding another one over there. And we got two in the inside that watch the dogs to see who's chewing up my stuff. You know, because those are the soft spots, right? So you got to look at it with that too. And I mean, there's a jewelry store we go to in Dallas. When we walk in, there's an officer in there, an armed officer in there. 99% of the time that I'm in there, he's on his phone. He's doing this. It's a boring job. I've done the jobs, robbery suppression, hostile terminations, those kind of things where you're just sitting around. But it's that sitting around where you miss the guy in the hoodie when it's 115 degrees outside, sneaking around the corner, coming up to the door, trying to get a buzz, doing this with the, you know, all that stuff. And you're sitting here playing on your phone, and someone at the jewelry store has to say, hey, officer, you know, you should see that guy coming a mile away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doing your job and staying diligent, you should see that coming all the way.
So yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
Go ahead, Ron. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, with the on the matter of schools, I just have this idea. I've had some Israeli friends who they have this opinion that their staff should be, or key members of the staff in the school should be armed. And in their mind, where they live, most of them are armed. And the probably 20 years I've sort of been acquainted with them, now they swear that there's never been an accidental shooting. So my question would, with that work here in U.S. schools, if you trained staff members, both use of firearms and also in situational defense and, you know, and all those things, would you think that would work here? And what's your opinion there?
Here's the problem with that. I'm not going to name any cities, but there are certain cities that if the teachers are armed, they're still going to be outgunned.
Milwaukee.
And if the bad guys know that the teachers are armed in certain metropolitan cities, they're going to bring bigger guns or more guns or more people with guns. And as a protection guy, this is going to sound weird from a protection guy, but in the room, I want to know that I'm the only one with the gun, right?
Right. Right.
If my client's in the room, I want to know I'm the only one with the gun. But the reality is, bad guys get guns. The good guys do what they're supposed to do, that kind of thing.
Right.
So if a good guy teacher goes and said, I volunteer, I want to do that, and a couple of his bad students find out, How is an altercation with that teacher going to end up? It's going to end up with two guys with a gun against the teacher. So that's what I worry about with arming the staff. I think it's a good idea if they're, you know, properly trained and all that stuff. But the problem is kids still get the guns in the school.
Right.
So unless you can stop kids from getting the guns in the school, you're looking at, you know, that kid that came in Tennessee with the rifle shooting around and a bunch of, and he knew there were teachers that had it. I bet you he would have gone and targeted those teachers first. It's like the old thing where we watched a training video with a police officer at a gas pump, and these guys came up to rob the gas station. They shoot the officer first because he's got the gun. They know he's got the gun. He becomes a target. That's why guys that open carry, I just wish I could just pull him aside and say, dude,
right. You don't want to.
I walk into a QT and I say, dude, all you're doing is making yourself a bigger target.
Right.
Who do you think they're going to shoot first if they decide to rob this place?
Right.
Like, put the gun that's not ready, that's holding it, four beers,
but right.
gun strapped and tied to his leg, you know, in public. So I don't know the full answer to that, but that's my concern, in especially in the metropolitan cities. There are cities that are so unsafe that if they know teachers have guns, they're going to come in with bigger guns and more guns.
Directly tied to that, that's a good question, Ron, too. If you're in a position where you're the one person overseeing the school and you know where the doors are locked and, like Ron says, everything's secure that way, isn't there some way that we could make sure when you did call, you A, had a backup team that was trained, and B, the backup team would take charge and follow their rules rather than stand around the building or the hall like they did in South Texas and nothing happened?
It was frustrating to watch. I'm not law enforcement, and I have had a gun pointed at me right here, but I don't know the stress of walking up and hearing gunshots and that kind of thing. But I've been on a quick response team for some strikes that got out of hand, and it's there's certain schools that are close to each other, and they're not miles and miles apart from each other. So I guess you could have a quick response team made up of 10 guys, and you know, and if there's a lockdown, you split them up. They know that three of them go to each, and there's a team leader guiding. And if something, the officer at one of the schools, they're less than 2 minutes away or something like that. I mean, I there's some way to be able to do that. But it still comes down to, does the officer, whether a protection agent and something's happening, because I don't want to just say this is about law enforcement or even military, if you hear gunfire going in there, it still comes down to somebody sitting there and going, I want to go home tonight.
Right.
If I go in here, am I going to go home tonight? A guy with six kids at home, and he's 6 months from retiring, and, you know, that guy's going to think about it. I'm not going in. I'm going to send you in. You're 25 years left. Go in there. You get shot. You get, you know, whatever, rest pay, and you can come back from it. You know, that's the problem. The human element is the part that you
can't anticipate.
Because, you know, I've done 1,000 those shoot, no shoot video things. And as stressful as some of it is, because you got a room full of people, you got an instructor, you got the whole thing. And that's not the same pressure when one of the shoot, no shoot videos show a guy coming around the back of a car and just doing this, and all of a sudden pulls out a gun and starts shooting. And it's just hard to know how someone's going to react to that.
Right. Well, on that note also then, what is your sort of opinion and advice on situational awareness? How do we, what is it necessary? Is it beneficial? And how do we get everyday people to start sort of learning to be situationally aware? Because quite frankly, I'm stunned every time, everywhere I go, how completely just oblivious people are. I mean, she's not here right now, so I can say it. But one of the constant sort of ongoing sort of things, irritation with my wife, we've had for 30 years. We go into a hotel lobby, we go to the desk, then we go to the elevator, then go to the room, and she has no clue about who she passed, who was in the hallway, who was around the corner, where the exit is. And she gets mad because I'm the guy who's, why are you always so paranoid? I'm not paranoid. And I literally get to every hotel room. She knows it. I'll tell you how many steps from the elevator to the room, how many steps from the room to the nearest exit. I go down the exit. So we're at exit aisle, all those things. She goes, you're not security. Why do you?
Make sure you check the door so you can get back in the hallway. Remember that.
I do. I check the doors, make sure it's not locked when I come in, locked when I go out, all those things. I do this whole security check when we get to the hotel, and it drives her crazy.
This is the biggest problem right here. This is the biggest problem.
Yeah.
But one of the last trips to London, we stayed at the.
You mean this right here, right?
Because my wife
around like this.
Yes, this is what my wife would tell me, that she would be, if she was in here, she'd be going. So what I'll tell you a story that kind of illustrates it. So the dogs are going to bark here in a minute.
We got 2 minutes. Go ahead, Frank.
The Churchill Hotel in London.
Right.
When we stayed there, I met with the security director and I asked what kind of crime was going on in this area.
Yeah.
The crime that he said that was going on in that area were people on the motorbikes, the little mopeds and that kind of thing, swiping phones from Americans that are walking down the street doing this. That was their biggest crime. That's the biggest crime he could tell me about. And I'll tell you, situational awareness isn't just, even if you don't have the phone, if you're walking with your friend, I've done surveillance twice in the last couple of months on a family member of the family I work with. And she has actually walked in front of my truck twice in two different occasions and did not see me. And I was shocked because I was way out of the way. No one should be able to see me. But they walked up on me and they didn't know that it was me. Mm-hmm. Same truck that's in their driveway every day, same license plate on the truck, same me. And then so
see it.
You have to see things around you.
Yeah.
Wake up there. Oh, I
gotta who's see around me? Yes.
I wish there was some kind of class that we could every school and they have to take it each semester.
Yeah.
Maybe you could come back, Frank, sometime and just give us like 10 steps to being aware, like Ron's talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I do that when I talk about identity theft. I do 3 steps to situational awareness.
Yeah, that'd be
good. That'd be great.
Okay, let's do that. Ladies and gentlemen, it's always fun to hear what Frank's doing and realize that we can learn some stuff and there's things to be awake. So pay attention to that. We want to remind you also, Stephanie's not here. So yeah, right. Yeah. And you know who to pray for first. Well, pray for Frank and Christy first and then pray for the star. Yeah, that's good. That's good. We want to thank you for your support for our program, Raising Expectations. And 3 pastors here. I know if I've touched straws, they'd give me the short one. But in any event, we're glad that you support. There are some of you out there that support us month after month. I don't use your names because I wish I would, but you said that, and I'm so thankful for that. We could use some more. We're trying to do more things to get some more time and be able to do more things this way with the program. But if you'll go to our website, bbsradio.com/raising expectations, there's a donation scan. You just scan the Venmo scan there and you can make a donation, a love gift there. Or you can go to, as many of you do, to PayPal, and it's right there. The steps are very easy. And we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. There's no gift too small or too big to try to meet the needs. And you can follow down, see our programs that are coming up, and you'll be able to watch Frank again this week, pop up there, and you'll see him on our archives. So also our books, too. Some of you have asked me. I know Tank has some things going at the Legitimate Faith. Is at Barnes & Noble, and that's one I needed to let you know. And I'm sure that Craig's is also. But they're there for you, and we thank you for purchasing those books. I just sent a couple of autographed out today. So thanks so much for that. So, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you. We appreciate you. It's a privilege and an honor to have you as part of our Raising Expectations family. And, Frank, you're always in our prayers, man. There's never a day goes by that I'm driving down a crowded street somewhere in the area of Metro here, and I say, gee, Frank, I wonder what he's doing, if he's watching out for stuff, you know. So, you know, we'll see what happens. When they call you from the White House, we were all praying that way, so just be ready. But they're not going to let you go. You stay where you're in a good spot. All right, Ron, we missed you, brother. It's good to have you back. And Paul, it's always a pleasure. Pressure, too. Boy, that's pleasure. Yeah, pleasure. Pleasure. Thank you. So, I didn't eat dinner yet, Frank. That'll teach me. But anyway, God bless you and your new home. And we'll pray over your home and bless it in a special way. And we'll be back in touch with you. Thanks for taking the time of your schedule to be with us and to share. We'd love to have you on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
I will, as a faithful 49er, throw those shots up in prayers for those Cowboys, too, because I like them, too. Penalty flag. All right, thanks, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget the Cowboys and Niners this week.
Thank you. Thanks,
Frank. God bless you.
Thank you.
See you later, guys.
Take care.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556, or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.